Technorama episode 507. Tonight's episode title is The Eagle Has Landed or Live at the Apollo. And that, my friends, is why we do this. Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you very much. Whether you're coming to us from iTunes or Google or Stitcher or what's the other one, Craig? Radio?
Radio Public.
I kept wanting to say radio yesterday. It's like, no, that was my old podcast.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with Radio Public, but it looks pretty cool.
Thank you very much. It was recommended to us by Evo Terra to get listed there, so we said, why not? Another director can't hurt, and it's pretty open. Joining me, as always, is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing well. Doing good.
And absent from the studio for a while, but he's back, is Mr. Brian Brown.
Hi. I decided since you guys took a month and three quarters vacation that I might as well do the same. You know, it's like... You know, why not?
We didn't authorize that, but okay.
Dock my pay, Craig. Dock my pay.
Right. He's going to get demoted back to trainee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
we're gonna trim some of the benefits you get around here.
Oh, what, clean the cat box? I mean, you know.
He's already been doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How low can you go?
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll let that one go.
All right. Fine.
All right. We have feedback for our question of the week. Letters. Oh, well, we not really letters.
Your Facebook posts.
Mail. I love those letters. Don't we love them all?
We love you all.
Oh, boy. Mailman. Mail
today. All right. This just off the press.
What is this Facebook ad nearby? Recommendations. It's trying to sell me
property.
Is
I guess
it a house for $650?
Rent, probably.
Okay. It's the most nondescript ad on the side of this page. So our question of the week went on Facebook yesterday, and we said, "What is your go-to video game, past or present?" And we don't have time to read all 47 of these, but we'll get some of the highlights. Like Myron said, Mortal Kombat. We've got some classics. Steve Asplund said Tempest. Evan Small, Counter-Strike, Global Offense. It's just interesting to see who's going old school and who's going new.
Right.
Galaga and Centipede are on there. Pong.
Pong, that's hardcore old school.
That's one of my high school buddies right there.
Yeah.
And somebody's looking forward. Wayne is looking forward to August 27 when he gets WoW Classic.
No, I wouldn't. I played a bootleg WoW server, WoW Vanilla, as they call it, and it's so horrible. It's you think, you have these great, you know, rose-colored glasses. It's going to be fantastic.
No, it's a
super grindy mess.
Not really.
Not so much.
Justin Deal gives us a few. He says, Warframe seems to be my big one, but I'll be honest. Skyrim, Siren Calling.
Lots of Skyrim.
Siren Call brings me back to at least once or twice a year since it comes out. So, yeah, a lot of go-to. People like to play the old ones once in a while. I do that as well. I'll get online and play an old game. Sometimes it's
actually,
not even
the Internet Archive has a bunch of arcade games.
Mm-hmm. It does.
That you can play.
Who was it that gave us the multi-part answer? I think that was on yours, wasn't it, Craig? You asked the same question. Oh, Gary Lindros. Yep. He said, for the arcade, Galaga. For console, Sonic the Hedgehog. For PC, Age of Empires.
I discount Gary since he made a snarky comment about C64, the Commodore 64, in another thread.
Did he offend you?
Yes, he did. Offended me horribly.
He what?
Yeah, I know. See, Craig, I was going to tell you to gang up on him with me because, yeah, I know.
Don't mess with my Commodore.
Me either, man. I was thinking about this too. Mine are definitely Mass Effect series for sure for PC and Civilization. I love the Civilization. I love that submarine DOS game. I remember it.
Dominic was one of the park rangers as well. Gato Growler submarine DOS game version because you can hit Control Tab and fake a spreadsheet. It's a boss key. Remember?
Oh yeah, there are a lot of games that have that boss key. It's kind of hilarious. It's like it looks like a fake spreadsheet of some sort.
Wasn't there a Netflix thing that made Netflix look like Slack or something like that?
Oh yeah, there's some sort of Netflix mod that you're watching Netflix at work, you can make it look like somewhere else. Yeah.
Only it drops into what was the movie game they came up with?
Game.
The choose your own adventure game that Netflix had.
Oh, the Black Mirror one?
Yes.
Bandersnatch.
Bandersnatch. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That'd be funny if you're playing Bandersnatch.
Just at work. Yeah, some good ones in there. Lots of old school ones I thought was cool. So
yeah.
A lot of cool old console ones too.
A Dreamcast.
So what is yours, Chuck?
What is mine? My go-to game? Oh, I thought I had an answer for this. I when you asked the question last week and I had an answer. I have to think because
it's kind of like your old. What's your movie you go to? There's, you know, it's always one. Right. It's like you sit down and watch Shawshank over and over.
There's
again.
A number of them. If I see them, I will play them. Like console games. When we were at Dragon Con a couple of years ago, I walked up and played Centipede. Yeah, mm-hmm. And the skills were a little rusty, but I remember the technique of how I used to play it. It's just my hand-eye coordination isn't what it used to be. Battlezone would be in there. Tron. I can't remember any of the patterns anymore. Oh. But I'm sure my hand will. It's just, you know.
I could mop you off the floor with Tron.
Probably at this point. There was a time when I could mop you, buddy.
I don't know.
Level 9 and 10 were not uncommon on a good night.
I spent a lot of money for my college fund in a Tron machine. So, just
saying. Yeah, I spent
that.
Yeah.
What about you, Brian?
The Mass Effect was, like I said, the Mass Effect trilogy and then Civilization for PC. Since I'm mostly a PC guy. But I mean, no, there's always games on the console. Sure, like Shadowrun for Sega Genesis, which was amazing. I played that a lot. But there's a lot of, you know, old games too, like Commodore 64, Neuromancer is one of my go-tos. I played a lot of.
After the show, let's play Oregon Trail on the Apple II.
There you go. Oregon Trail. Lemonade Stand was always popular.
Wolfenstein, the original Wolfenstein.
VGA Trek.
What were the two on the PC Junior we used to play? Space Quest? A King's Quest and what was the space one?
Space Quest, yeah. King's Quest and Space King's Quest.
And the space one had either ZZ Top or the Blues Brothers doing the little dance when they were in that cantina club.
Oh, okay.
It was really bad. It took me a while to figure out what ZZ Top song it was because it was going,
so lifelike.
Doot, doot. It's like, supposed to be Sharp.
If it was on a Commodore 64, you could have told. But...
Yeah.
Anyway, for me, it was Tron and Gyrus. Those were my two favorite go-to games.
Joust was a good one. Missile Command.
Gyrus. Gyrus.
I know. I heard what you said.
I can mop anybody on that game. Just saying. Just throwing it out there. I know we've had, was it Claudio, I think it was. I'm still waiting on him to show up. For the PC, I guess Quake, that was a big one. Quake and
for
Quake
the
2.
PC, I'd probably have to say it was Wolfenstein 3D.
Oh, yeah.
I played that one the most. I mean, I didn't play a whole lot of PC games, but that was a good one, too. And then you discovered how you could mod the environment, and you're putting graffiti on the walls.
Oh, yeah.
Hitler sucks.
Right.
Good times.
All right, that takes us to the end of the feedback. We will have another question for you at the end of the show and post it on social media. All right, gentlemen, roll your D20. Craig, are you prepared?
No.
Oh, hold on.
Of course not. He's not. He does.
As soon as I say Brian's on the show, you should be running for that thing. He doesn't have the headphones on, so rip on them all that you want.
What a more. Oh, hey, Craig.
It's right there.
As soon as I say Brian's on at the pre-show, you should be running to get those things.
They're in my backpack. You're like,
And right. I love this. He puts them in his backpack, but he never uses them when he's on the road.
You don't know that. You don't know
I
that.
Do. He's going to bring them to Dragon Con and forget them.
And they're never going to,
Wait a minute. I did use them at Dragon Con last year.
You had to go up to the room and get them.
We know I got him. I got him. 15, 20 minutes later, he comes back down.
I got my own.
And everybody's like, shut up, Craig.
All right. I'm going to
just go, hey, Scott, you got some spares.
All right. I'm going to put him back in the bag.
It never even rolled. It just sort of went thud.
I got a one.
Great. So did I.
I win with an 8.
I got a one as well, Craig.
You both die of a paper cut.
And do we need to roll off?
Yep, roll off.
All right.
Jeez, roll, that same thing. It just died.
Roll for critical.
I got a 3.
I got a 7.
Okay.
All right. So it's Chuck, wow. Brian, Chuck, Craig.
Chuck, Brian, Craig.
Okay. You know, I've had these dice for like 35 years. I'm going to see if I can return them.
You get your 35 cents back.
Yeah.
On this day in history for July 17th, 2019, this is the 198th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 167 days remaining in 2019. We're on the downside, folks. It was on this day in 1717 that King George I of Great Britain sails down the River Thames with a barge of 50 musicians where George Frederick Handel's Water Music is premiered. How appropriate.
Very nice. Yeah. Also on July 17th, 1867, Harvard School of Dental Medicine is established in Boston. All right. It is the first dental school in the U.S. that is affiliated with a university.
Aha, that's the distinction.
Yes.
There you go. That same date in 1899, NEC Corporation is organized as the first Japanese joint venture with foreign capital.
NEC in 1899. That's not one you think of, is it?
No.
That's pretty old. 117 or 1170 years ago, Willis Carrier creates the first air conditioner in Buffalo, New York. Should have been in Phoenix, but we're all thankful for that.
Thank you. On July 17th, 1918, Tsar Nicholas II, Nicholas II of Russia and his immediate family and retainers are executed by Bolshevik Czechists at the Optiev House in Yekaterinburg, Russia.
That's nice. Pretty good.
There we go.
Yeah, that's pretty close. Yeah.
What a bunch of
Bolsheviks. Yeah, what a bunch of Bolsheviks.
It was also on this date in 1955 that Disneyland is dedicated and opened by Walt Disney in Anaheim, California.
Wait a minute. Did we or did we not just see a picture on the Svengoolie group on... Hold on. This is worthy of discussion. I got to pause the music. There was a picture on the Svengoolie group on Facebook that said, from 1939... from Disneyland, and it looked like a scary Mickey and Minnie. I mean, they had a dog muzzle on these things. It must not have been Disneyland, but it might have been a precursor to that.
Maybe, because Disneyland wasn't into the 50s.
Yeah, he didn't come out with a theme park for a while, but they might have had something at the studio or
testing or something. Yeah.
It was creepy. It was. Mm. I'll have to share that one with the rest of the group. It was just creepy to say the least. Okay, unpause. There we are.
Yeah.
Where were we again? I was on this date in 1962 that the small boy test shot, Little Feller 1, becomes the last atmospheric test detonation at the Nevada National Security Site. Oh, yes, we love our nuclear atmospheric tests.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong, right?
Yeah, nothing.
Also on July 17th, 1975, an American Apollo and a Soviet Soyuz spacecraft dock with each other in orbit, marking the first such link up between spacecraft from the two nations.
The handshake in space. Yep, I remember that.
That was pretty cool. In July 17th, 1984, the national drinking age in the United States was changed from 18 to 21. And at the time, all 18-year-olds just,
pretty much.
The 17 and a half-year-olds went, what?
You suck.
I'm almost there.
It was 34 years ago today that the founding of the Eureka Network, that's all capitals, by former head of state François Mitterrand of France and Helmut Kohl from Germany.
Wow, okay. Was on this date in 1989, the first flight of the B-2 Spirit stealth bomber occurred.
89?
Yeah.
Wow.
Stealth bomber.
July 17th, 2001... the Concorde is brought back into service nearly a year after the July 2000 crash.
So they flew it a little bit more.
Yep.
And then said, just kidding.
I saw a documentary on that thing. That was kind of interesting.
Happy birthday goes out of the state to German-American businessman and philanthropist John Jacob Astor. Not John Jacob Bastard.
Or Jingleheimer Schmidt.
Schmidt, yeah.
Born on this date in 1763. Hey, wait, wasn't he on the Titanic?
No. Maybe. I don't know.
He would have been like, years old.
Ephraim Shea, the American engineer, invented the Shea locomotive, was born 180 years ago today.
And Belgian priest, astronomer, and cosmologist, Jorgas Lemaître, was born 125 years ago today.
Nailed it.
Yeah, we nailed it. Nailed it. Way to go, Craig. Yeah. Good job. Good Thank job. You. Bravo.
I can't Some see friends my I eyes got. Bernice Abbott, the American photographer, was born 121 years ago today.
James Cagney, see? American actor and dancer, was born on the same date in 1899.
Pretty bad guy,
yeah,
see?
Yeah, see?
And born July 17th, 1912.
Wait, was that James Cagney?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't at all.
Sorry. I was just going with it, whatever. Canadian-American radio and television host Art Linkletter.
People are funny.
Yep.
Phyllis Diller, the American actress, comedian, and voice artist, was born 102 years ago today. I don't think she's still with us.
No. Gordon Gould, American physicist and academic, invented the laser, was born on the same date in 1920.
I think his real name was Gould and brought us the laser.
Gould.
He was from, he was one of the, never mind, yeah. SG-1
yeah.
reference.
Yeah, okay.
All right. So English car designer, co-founder of the Cooper Car Company, wait for it. John Cooper was born 96 years ago today.
Nice.
Drive a Cooper or not. That was their sales pitch.
Yeah, pretty much.
As long as it's black. Wait, that's somebody else's.
No, that's Ford, yeah.
Also born on the same date in 1929, Russian mathematician and academic Sergei K. Gudnov.
Gudnov.
Yeah, that's right. You use this theorem all the time in math.
Also turning 84 today is Canadian actor and producer Donald Sutherland.
And the Duchess of Cornwall. Camellia is born today on this date in 1947.
American producer, singer, and actor, The Hoff. David Hasselhoff is 67 today.
Also born on this date in 1954, American author, screenwriter, and producer, J. Michael Straczynski. Yay!
And German chemist and politician, 8th Chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel is born on this date in 1954.
She's not doing so good these days. Also turning 64 is the American mycologist and author Paul Stamets. Yes, that Paul Stamets.
Nice.
Yes.
Canadian-American cosmologist and astronomer Wendy Freeman, born on this date in 1957. Cosmetologist and cosmologist, totally different things.
I'll tell you where the stars are and fix your hair at the same time.
We'll get your makeup done. Right. Yeah.
And last but not least, also turning 48 today is Canadian author and activist Cory Doctorow.
Happy birthday to all of you. And the listeners that are on the listener birthday this week include Lord Dumacus on the 18th and Nikolai from Dancing with Elephants, or the former Dancing with Elephants.
He's probably like got a family of his own
now. He's probably 18 now. It's golden birthday. Because he was 14 years ago, so wow. That would stand a reason.
You know what? I was just looking at their website, and the last podcast was in 2010.
Okay.
Well.
Kind of sad, but.
Happens.
Also, the 23rd.
No, I mean, yeah.
Dave Perillo from Megapodtastic. Here, we'll give him a ding on that one, too. And Monty Goes Art-O-Rama. Happy birthday to all of you. If it's your birthday and you didn't happen to make it on the birthday calendar, well, thank you very much and welcome to the rest of the world. You can get your birthday on the list easily enough over at chuckchat.com/wiki. And Craig, I gave Craig crap because his wife's birthday went by and it wasn't on the birthday calendar.
My.
I was respecting her privacy.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Why start now?
Man, I don't know. It just seemed like a good idea.
At the time? Okay.
Well, then you better stop putting those pictures in the shower on Instagram.
What are you talking about?
Kim left this giant hairball in the shower after she showered. How dare she? Those ones, you know.
That's the way it was on this day in history for July 17th, 2019. And we're going to fast forward a little bit because this is the week of the anniversary of Apollo. It's the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11, the day we landed on the moon. So I guess that would also include the launch is this week.
Yeah.
What would that be? The 17th. How come it didn't say history that they launched?
Well, no, because the launch is going to be before they landed, so.
It wasn't a three-day journey to get there?
I think it was three, yeah.
If they landed on the 20th, they should have taken off on the 17th.
Right, 17th.
I'm going to check Wikipedia. I think they might have been missing something. Anyway, let's get into our salute to Apollo here. Salute to Apollo 11! We need dramatic music for that. And our first story is 11 things you may not have known about Apollo 11. Or maybe you did. So the landmark mission, I'm waiting for this page to finish loading. There we are. We won't go through all 11. You can find those through the show notes over at chuckchat.com/technorama. But President Kennedy didn't really care about the moon. I believe that.
I think he just wanted to get to space first before the Russians, really.
Well, and the fact that you could put it showed supremacy. And in public, President John F. Kennedy made soaring speeches proclaiming that he was going to the moon to, quote, organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. But in private, he was a pragmatic politician, more focused on earthly concerns. Quote, everything we do ought to be tied into getting to the moon ahead of the Russians. Yeah. It was a political thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he told NASA administrator, he told NASA administrator in 1962, guess who the NASA administrator was? What? I'll give you a clue. He's got a telescope named after him right now, and it ain't Hubble. James Webb.
I was going to say Craig Stepp. What? Oh.
Yes.
He told James Webb.
I got two telescopes named after me in the corner over here.
I'm not that interested in space. Okay. The Apollo 11 crew had it to hawk their autographs for life insurance. What? Wow. The lunar spacesuits were created by a lingerie company.
Okay.
Well, try that.
Playtex, the company to cross your heart bra.
Hey, honey, you in the mood tonight? I'm wearing the Apollo 11.
I'm feeling really sexy tonight.
Imagine the commercials they could have. We went to the moon and look what walk in the bedroom.
Plug in my umbilical, will you? Yeah. Well, there's just a whole bunch of bad humor about that.
Yes.
I need a spacesuit with this one. Or hazmat suit.
Something.
NASA officials worried they might blow up their spectators because the Saturn V rocket was so big that during the test flight of Apollo 6 in 1968, they didn't really know if the fireball would be. Yeah, if it blew up, well, bad things could happen. Are the people far enough away? That's why when you see the people on the little bleachers. They're, what, a mile or so away from the launch
way
pad?
Far away.
Oh, yeah.
Buzz Aldrin took communion to the moon. I did not know that.
It was in the movie.
I missed that.
Yeah.
Okay.
He offered to share it when they were on the moon.
This one captured my attention. A felt-tip pen rescued the astronauts. I'm going to read real quick. In the cramped confines of the lunar module, Armstrong's backpack smashed against the ascent engine arming switch, the critical one which needed to light the ignition and begin the flight back to Earth, and it broke off.
Ouch.
Oops. Nice gun, Neil.
He's got to hotwire it.
Mission control had no obvious fix, but the astronauts were old hands at improvising solutions with tricky problems. Aldrin pulled out a felt-tip pen from the pocket of his spacesuit. And, quote, I inserted the pen into the small opening where the circuit breaker switch should have been and pushed in. Sure enough, the circuit breaker held. He recounted in his 2009 book, A Magnificent Desolation. We were going to get off the moon after all.
Can you imagine if they hadn't gotten off the moon and they are stranded there?
I mean, everybody would look up at the moon and go, there's dead people up there.
Yeah.
Yep. That would have been bad.
Yeah.
And a number of people were on the moon and they all got off. So
yeah, can you imagine other missions that came after that one. Yeah.
Fly over the Sea of Tranquility.
We're gonna pass the Sea of Tranquility. We want to go over there.
Bad luck.
Thanks.
Bad luck.
Well, they got off, but they left a little something behind.
Yes, they did.
Oh yes, they left their biological waste behind. We'll leave it at that.
Yes, they did.
And I love how in the early days, I remember this, they'd get back and they'd have to sit in that Airstream trailer for like a week.
Yeah, it's like, really?
They were quarantined. Well, you didn't know. Is there biological? Were they irradiated?
I love the picture. It looks like Nixon's making fun of them.
How are you doing here to laugh at you guys?
There's a sign on the window, please don't tap. It frightens the animals.
They need a little sign that says Homo sapiens.
Okay. Astronaut written in crayon. President Nixon Astronaut. Was ready for Apollo 11 to end in disaster. Well, I know that they had to have the
contingency.
The letter to the widows ready if it didn't go so well. The U.S. flags put on the moon by Apollo astronauts are still standing, except for the one from Apollo 11. Oh, interesting.
My understanding is, too, is that they're no longer colored, probably, because of the radiation and atmosphere, that they're probably just white or severely faded. They don't.
Oh, really the know. One that's on the moon right now, I believe, is. Yeah. They said. Yeah.
Kind of like how the Tesla is going to get irradiated and all the rubber will deteriorate.
Yeah.
It's not going to look so good. It's not going to be factory fresh when we see it next.
It's going to look like somebody stole the tires off of it.
Yeah. It's going to look looks like you lived in the bad part of town.
All right.
Dude, I knew Saturn was a bad place.
You know, when it comes to Buzz Aldrin, I really appreciate what he does. He's the guy who has to stand out. And our next article has 8 of the Apollo astronauts all gathered up for a photograph commemorating the 50th anniversary. And Buzz is the odd man out in this one. But I like his individuality. Having grown up in a family of 9, and there just happens to be 8 gentlemen in this picture. They're all wearing their nice bow ties and tuxes. And
not Buzz.
Buzz has what looks more like something left over from Lawrence Welk's party.
No, it actually looks like Hugh Hefner.
Hugh Hefner. And his socks were the talk of the town on this, apparently.
Yeah.
So,
but look, his suit has little moons all over it.
Oh, that's what it is.
Okay. Moons and rockets.
There's a picture from right to left, from left to right. Charlie Duke from Apollo 16, Buzz Aldrin, obviously Apollo 11, Walter Cunningham from Apollo 7, Al Warden, Apollo 15, Rusty Schweigert. Wasn't he supposed to be one of the Apollo 11s?
Schweigert.
He was the backup guy, the Kevin Bacon character.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
In Apollo 13, was it?
Apollo 13, yes, it was Apollo 13. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, apparently he was on Apollo 9.
But I don't think he went down. He was supposed to be. He had a different position, I think.
Harrison Schmitt, Apollo 17, last mission. Michael Collins from 11, and Fred Hayes from Apollo 13. The Fred Hayes. These are famous names. And you know, they're just ordinary guys. One of them kind of looks like Clint Eastwood.
Take your pick.
They had the right stuff. And there's another picture with a circle on Buzz's socks.
Yeah, the stars and stripes.
They were the
spotlight. Look, the guy went to the moon. He can wear whatever he wants.
He's like, suck it, all you.
I can't wait to be his age and wear whatever the heck I want. I would wear Hawaiian shirts. Oh.
Yeah. Oh, wait. What?
Guess that.
Are you there, Chuck?
I'm there. That would have been a cool place to be and see those guys. Imagine getting a selfie. Oh.
Yeah.
Once in a lifetime. That would have been something. All right. 7 inventions. You know, we talk about Star Trek a lot and inspiring inventions that we have every today. But there were a number of things that the Apollo program brought us that we use today, still use today. Brian, why don't you take it away?
So we have number 1, of course, the famous Dustbuster.
Yes.
So basically, Black and Decker worked with NASA developing a lightweight, power efficient tool for the Apollo lunar surface drill. So basically, the same motor design used in the 69 moon landing was used to create the Dustbuster.
Wait, why didn't they just take a hose and vent it out the window? That space is a vacuum.
Yeah. Hey. No, but
nature abhors a vacuum, and that's why I hate house cleaning.
But
it doesn't get any better.
Thermal blankets, you know, the ones you see after marathon runners, they wrap around their shoulders, emergency patients, that sort of thing.
The kind they put on the children in the
immigration centers.
Too soon.
Yeah. Were obviously used for the astronauts when they went on their missions. Advanced cameras, obviously tiny, highly efficient cameras that we use in our cell phones, for example. GoPros, basically, thanks to NASA, you know, basically making smaller cameras because, you know, imagine that, the ones that were like this big, you couldn't cram in a capsule very easily. So
can't take it on your space carry-on.
Yeah.
It's big cameras.
Fireproof firefighter uniforms, basically.
Really?
Yeah, because the Apollo 11 mission,
the Apollo 1.
Yeah. Basically,
that's when they went oxygen.
Bad idea. But they put it in the Apollo 11 mission specifically. Because of that. So, but yeah, after they killed all the ones in Apollo 1, guess what? They made the suits out of that flexible.
Wait, why did it take them from Apollo 1 when they had a fire to Apollo 11 to actually get fire retardant materials.
Took
on
them a while to figure it out.
I don't want to be on 2 yeah. through 10.
Yeah, exactly. Just in case. Vacuum sealed food, you know, thanks to your the thing that you allow you to vac-pack stuff and throw it in your freezer.
Ron Popeil took advantage of that.
And the hair. Spray hair.
What?
I was going to say, I've had MREs. Those are similar.
That's a little different. That's from the military.
I mean, it's a little different. I mean, talking about the vacuum seal part.
What about Tang?
Tang actually wasn't in the moon missions.
Oh.
That's actually
that's just a marketing thing that they said this is the drink of astronauts.
So what it is they had developed it for the space program, but it was never used.
Oh,
so that's kind of an interesting little fact.
I know that the astronauts, it's still a tradition, if I recall, that they get steak and eggs for breakfast. I was wanting to be an astronaut just for that.
It makes risking my life so much better.
It could be your final meal.
So yeah, there you go. Feed them well. Shock absorbing sneaker soles.
What?
So the sneaker company Avia turned to NASA's suit when wanting to create a shock-absorbing sole that didn't break down under pressure. A patented compression chamber midsole created in 1990s was invented to help with the help of a NASA Apollo engineer. Sorry.
Okay. Well, so the NASA engineer helped with that.
Yeah. So NASA that's basically cool. spawned a bunch of engineers that created all these great things.
Yeah.
So.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Pretty neat.
Hey, by the way. We got some good conversation going in here, and Morgan Beyer
yes.
Is piping in with some information about the Apollo, and it basically is saying that the Apollo program, as well as all space programs, Gemini, et cetera, was much as a military program as it was a political symbolic program, which I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The U.S. government was... I think mastering ballistic technology to carry warheads.
And we didn't get off to a good start on that race either.
No. Here's another one here. When the Russians put Sputnik into orbit, pretty much the main concern of the U.S. military and government was today a satellite, tomorrow a warhead. Yep. So the space race was more a weapons delivery system race than the symbolic race of societies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I think so.
Well, that's absolutely. What was the name? The rocket guy.
Werner Braun?
Werner von Braun, yep. Yes. Mm-hmm. I had the von part. I couldn't get the Braun. So Werner von Braun, his original idea wasn't military. It was space exploration.
Yeah.
He was inspired by Goddard about rockets going into space. And that then when the military went, ooh, rockets, we could launch weapons really far with this.
Well, so he had the Germans do that. Said that, really. I mean, they're like, we want the bomb.
And he said, well, I'll do that so I can fund my hobby.
Pretty much, yeah.
Kind of like why Craig and Brian and I work all week so we can do podcasts.
Because obviously podcasting is not funding anything else.
And it's not benefiting mankind in space.
Or is it? We don't know.
All right. Should we take a quick break?
Sure.
All right. Real quick break. We'll be right back with Hacks and Strange Stories and some other stuff we decided to put in the show notes. So hang on. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Nuke Choss, the host of Nutty Bites.
And hi, I'm Tech, Nutty's regular guest.
Or antagonist. Our podcast is like a call-in show where geeks get to debate topics about speculative fiction.
We don't really debate.
Sure we do. We debate topics such as lame superpowers, the best villains, and our favorite apocalypses.
We're more like rant, rave, and then have massive nerd rages.
People call in from all over the world, sometimes minor celebrities, and we've even had some supervillains show up.
Do you ever notice that you never have any superheroes or good guys?
I'm a good guy.
Compared to what?
Antagonist. Not really a guest. Nutty Bites. Nimlast.org.
I'm Patrick Norton, DLTV and Twit. And you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Brian reminded me that I misspoke at the beginning. I think I said 507 was the episode. This is actually 570. We must have hit a time warp or something.
What did you say?
He said 507, not 570. And I'm like,
it wasn't the show notes. That was all on me. But
you know what?
Good on Brian.
We could have said nothing and we could have fixed it in post.
No, I think it's more fun. It's the Technorama way. Duct tape, chicken wire. Put the wheels on as you go down the road.
Well, I did it first, but I just stopped, editing out our ums and ahs and coughs and all that stuff. And
he stopped listening is what he did.
It's maybe. So time consuming to do that. Oh, it's so time consuming. The lip smacks, all that. Oh.
Actually, there were times when we had lag or something wasn't right and the conversation was a little off. And I had a library of laughs and sounds of Chuck that I would cut off his track. And I just keep them around so I could add in a, you know, yes, like a.
We had to record those all at once. Okay, now give me a chortle.
Yeah. So I would line up the art. I would line everything up. There would be like a, there would be like a gap. And I'd fill it in with a little something and it sounded all natural.
It was easier to isolate those when we recorded our separate tracks and put them together later.
Yes.
In other words, just talk all over each other.
Right.
Should we do the Hacks and Train stories?
Well, we are now.
Oh, well, we're going to get into that whole biological thing now about.
Yes.
Go ahead, Craig. You seem to be eager to discuss the
ins and outs of space.
I guess you call it that. More the outs than ins. Yeah.
So, you know, as we alluded to earlier, about them having to leave some stuff back on the moon.
Like an outhouse? Do they have a porta potty?
They should have left one of those.
Somebody got the Sears and Roebuck catalog.
Anyway, basically what you know, NASA's had to overcome several, not several, but many challenges going to space. And part of that is, you know, the human body likes to excrete a lot of stuff. So the human body's messy. Out a way to
it is
it.
Messy.
Huh? Yeah, the human body's just messy, man.
I think Kimberly Clark's their unofficial tagline is, if it comes out of your body, we've got something to wipe it up.
Right.
Wow.
Anyway, NASA, so they're working on bathroom stuff. So astronauts Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin may have been the first people to set foot on the lunar surface when Apollo 11 landed there 50 years ago on July 20th. 50
million years ago?
Yeah, 50 million. But they had to forego some earthly conveniences in order to pull off a moon landing. So NASA engineers were so busy trying to figure out how to get astronauts to and from the moon, they didn't bother to design a toilet. Way to go.
Yeah.
For the Apollo missions. In fact, the first toilet wouldn't be installed into a U.S. spaceship until the space shuttle got one in the '80s. So defecation and urination have been a bothersome aspect of space travel from the beginning of manned spaceflight.
Hey, Craig.
Yes, sir.
I think it's really interesting that little Skylab bit in there where they talk about technically there was a toilet on Skylab.
Oh, yeah.
But it was really just like a hole in the wall. Oh.
Hole in the wall.
Congratulations.
Just put your butt kiss up to this and go.
Yeah, your front or your back, one of the two.
That's Ooh. Right.
It's so cold.
Yeah. Hey, I'm stuck.
I'm stuck. Oh, man.
So the air starts bending abs. Okay, hull breach contained.
Oh,
my.
So to pee, astronauts had to use what essentially looked like a condom, which they replaced daily, I hope, which was hooked up to a bag with a short hose, not their short hose, another hose. And there was no female-friendly friendly version, since the astronauts were all men, I guess that was convenient.
Can you imagine later on, though, when the women started to join the space program, how you had to redesign all that? Wow.
Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, I know, right? So the procedure for dealing with poop in space was no better. In the absence of a system providing positive means for removal of feces from the body, an extremely basic system had to be relied upon for fecal collection. The device used was a plastic bag, which was taped over the buttocks to capture the feces.
Poop in space.
Guess what it was called?
The fecal bag. The fecal bag. You have your feed bag and your fecal bag. Don't get them mixed up.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly.
Now I can picture Matt Damon on The Martian, you know, opening those little coffee sealed
Dear
bags.
Dear God, Johansson, what did you eat?
Oh, yeah. That's right. So, basically that's what they did. I think they brought them all back too, and they had to dispose of them here. I don't know why they didn't just
or on the moon.
Check them into space.
Yeah. Well, there's also a pouch for toilet paper. That's interesting.
Would have had to wipe.
And a built-in finger covering so the astronauts could stay clean while positioning the bag on their butts.
And they didn't have a whole lot of maneuvering room in that capsule.
It took about 45 minutes, it says here. I'm like, what? Oh. Can you imagine if you really had to go?
You know what gets me, though? You know how they always, especially when the space shuttle missions, when they're up there, everything is timed out. You got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this, then you can take a break. Got to do this. Imagine going, all right, I got to go. There's no, you know, and you got whatever you got going on.
You're not due for another 2 hours. Hold it.
Well, and obviously, you know, you had to pack it up and put it aside and then left it on the moon.
You got to wait for Buzz to finish. He's just starting. So you got to wait 45 minutes.
I love it. Unsurprisingly, the report notes the problem of odor was continually present.
Oh.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Just open the door.
Imagine when they splash down and you open that hatch, like, whoa, yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, and of course, they use diapers, basically. So, yeah. So when they're on the moon themselves, now moonwalking, they had diapers.
You'd have to. Hey. Yeah. What are you going to do?
Now, this is something you can do, and this is interesting, because relieving oneself in space is such a gross, time-consuming, and smelly task. Astronauts often took laxatives before launch and sometimes relied on drugs that kept their intestines running more slowly.
Oh, so they're constipated.
Kind of like an international flight.
Pretty much.
Only worse.
Super uncomfortable. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh. Space travel used to be messy.
Well, and there's, I remember the whole 2001 episode when he goes to use the bathroom in 2001, the movie, and how he's sitting there reading the directions and everything and that, you know, back in the 60s. Oh, you're like, oh yeah. Space travel.
No fun.
No,
no fun. All right. Let's do a shout out to the chat room. We are on Facebook Sunday nights at 9:30, and we have a number of people who've joined us this week. Oh, we got a good number of people. There must not be any, TV award shows or anything on.
I'm a draw. What can I say?
We called out Ranger Craig. We got Craig Stepp, Michael King, Weber Baker, longtime listener and friend of the show, John Clifford, Scott Tyler, LJ Weiss, Morgan Byers. I believe that's my cousin's wife, if I'm not mistaken.
Who?
Morgan.
No, it's a dude.
Morgan is a dude? Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll go with that. Well, I got Byers in the family, so. Brenda Inegas, know her. Cindy Adamson, I believe she's also a relative. Who do you see, Craig?
I see the same people you're talking about.
I see dead people.
No, because I doubt Brenda is on your favorites.
Scott Parsons, John Miller Jr., okay. Morgan Byers. Let's see. Elton Chapman. Elton Chapman. John Clifford, Scott Tyler. Technorama Podcast.
Thank you all for joining us, Technorama Podcast. If you want to be following us, go over to
my buddy Scott Parsons. Oh, let me make sure I shout out. Okay.
Go over to Facebook and go to the Technorama Podcast page. Turn on the notifications, follow us, and you'll get a notification. If you happen to be on Facebook, go boom and let you know that we are there. Also want to give a thank you to the patrons. Yes, we are at full capacity.
Oh, yeah.
All rows are full.
Time to make a new row.
That's right. We need a new row just to drive Craig's ODC crazy. OCD.
No, it's ODC.
COD?
OPP?
CDO. That's what it is.
CDO.
CDO. Yeah, CDO. We can't even get that right tonight. Thank you to Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills. Very much thank you to Megapodtastic Night Gig Studios, because they're using an alias. Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Leon, John Noble.
That Leon?
That Leon.
Oh, okay.
And our John Noble.
Okay, good.
MC okay. Chris, I mean Chris MC. Alexis Duran.
Yo.
Saturday Morning Media, another alias. Steve Therian, Jorge Schrauen. You know, we can make them rhyme now.
It's true, almost.
John Miller Jr., thank you very much to Amber Elstad, Harold McKinstry, Amy Bowen, Denise Inglis, Stephen Weshey.
Weshey!
I was waiting for it. Dean Jensen, Dandy Mancoyer, and our newest patron, Oh, Mark. Mark Encalf 1 Kilfoyle. Thank you very much to all of you.
I don't see Brian Brown's name anywhere. Mm-hmm.
I contribute by being here.
He contributes via his insurance company paying for rent on the guest house.
There you go.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Chuck and Don have loved this consistent payment for month after month.
We don't have to change the sheets every three days.
Yeah, you don't have to do all this stuff.
And we got a built-in cat sitter. This is awesome.
It's pretty awesome, man.
We're not going to let him go. Oh, it's a shame. Another tree,
tree hit your house. It burnt your house, burned down. I don't know what happened.
Never mind the chainsaw marks.
Oh, my.
Thank you, everybody, if you want to be part of this crew that helps keep the show going. And I really honestly do mean that, because the hosting and bandwidth stuff does add up, and it comes in big, huge chunks every few years, and it's coming to that time. And I'm happy to say that we are close to our goal. sounds like a PBS.
So put your donation in today.
It. Yeah.
Hey, by the way, Matt Baum just signed up as a patron. So
awesome!
So we got some more cells to fill up. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you very much. Technorama Podcast over at patreon.com. We greatly, greatly appreciate that. So, all right, turn that music off. Turn the music off. You got to get the fade and the finger touch thing going at the same time. So that takes us to, well, more Apollo news. It's in the Remember When section for whatever reason. So let's play that.
Couldn't technically all of it be in Remember When?
Yeah, I was going to say technically. Yeah, you're right.
Yes, but, well, the Hacks and Strange Stories thing I can see working for us. So we have how the man who picked the Apollo 11 crew finally got to fly. Did you add this at the last second, or did I miss this? No, this is to read this one, Craig. It's from the La Crosse Tribune, and they want me to fill out a survey if I want to read this article. So it's up to you.
It's all on you, Craig. No pressure.
Okay, so on the morning of the launch that sent the first men to the moon, Deke Slayton knocked on the doors of Neil Armstrong and Edwin Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins.
Hey, I've got a great idea, guys.
Yeah. We're going to steal a rocket.
I'm selling insurance.
Yes, I'm selling insurance.
Would you like to buy some Encyclopedia Britannica?
Yeah. And knocked on the doors at 4:15
a.m.
And it's a beautiful day. He says, it's a beautiful day. You're a go. Says Slayton, NASA's director of flight crew operations. Slayton is a self-described stick and rudder jockey. Thinking for a minute.
Not a fly-by-wire plane. It's the kind where you actually had mechanical movement.
Yeah, I thought he was a hockey player.
Stick and rudder.
From outside Sparta, he was one of the Mercury 7, NASA's first group of astronauts to make the cut. Oh. In fact, Slayton had been in line to be the fourth American in space until a slight heart condition grounded him before his first flight. That stinks.
He get grounded for anything.
Yeah, now Slayton drafted the roster for who could fly each mission. He picked Armstrong for Apollo 11, Aldrin to pilot the lunar module, and Collins to fly the command module. He unruffled the feathers when astronauts came to him over mission assignments, including who would take the first step on the moon. Wow, that would be a tough one.
That would be a tough call to make.
And he was the liaison between the astronauts and the top brass who were deciding whether Apollo 11 should be launched as scheduled. So anyway, after the Apollo 11 crew had their pre-flight medicals, Slayton joined them for traditional pre-launch breakfast of
steak and eggs.
Steak and eggs. And he rode with them for part of the 8 miles. Like, what, they make him get out and walk the rest?
Yeah. They're like, sorry, no admittance. No pass of velvet rope.
We're going to save $2 on the parking fee. Yes.
Yeah, I can't park it. The cops are terrible. Anyway, so he says he'd been to that pad some 20 times. He told New York Times later, every time I wish I was going all the way. Really did. I bet so. So you can go back and talk about some of his experiences working with a space program. It's kind of a lengthy article, so I'll just let you go and check it out yourself.
Our last one comes from NPR. It's the story about how they chose the camera that went to the moon. And Donna, can you put up that first picture? There's a couple of things I'm noticing in here. First of all, Is that a map of the Earth or coffee stains?
Yeah, it looks like.
Why does the guy holding the camera have two watches? And man, that's a heck of a lot of pencils and pens without a pocket protector.
NASA always has redundant systems, even on the left and right wrist.
There's just so much to comment on this picture that has nothing to do with the cameras.
Hey, the guy on the right looks like he's like, come on, I want to try it.
Yeah, my turn.
You said so.
It's not a GAF Viewmaster. Come on.
Oh, here you go. Morgan Byers chimes in again.
Yes.
Time zones.
So I kind of figured it was time zones, but I wasn't sure.
See, nowadays, I got digital watches, which are pretty cool, and I can just kind of...
Oh, so they could say, it's this time in London, it's this time at NASA kind of thing? Like, mm-hmm. I have the clocks in the studio?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay.
East Coast, West Coast? I don't know.
So in the summer of 1962, Walter Sherry... You know, have you read a story yet, Brian?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, one.
Okay. Just want to make sure you're included on
this
show.
It's okay. I understand.
You want this one too?
No, it's cool. No, you're good. Okay. You're good.
In the summer of 62, it was a summer of 62, Walter Shearer, who would soon become America's third man in orbit of the Earth. I was singing Summer 69 by Brian Adams.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay. I figured it out.
That would be appropriate song tonight, wouldn't it? Summer of 69 for the Apollo thing?
Something like that.
Anyway, he would become the America's third man in orbit of Earth, walked into Houston photo supply shop looking for a camera.
So what I need is a camera I can take into space. Yeah, buddy, get out. Get out of here.
You're talking crazy talk. Get out of here.
I got a 126. He came out with the Hasselblad 500C. That doesn't have anything to do with the temperature it was rated to. It was a high-end Swedish import that had been... They used Hasselblads for a long time on these space missions. It had been recommended to him by photographers from Life and National Geographic. And you know what? When they recommend something, you generally listen. He was sort of an amateur photographer, Jennifer Levasseur said, a curator in charge of the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum's astronaut cameras, says Shearer. Somewhere along the line, the decision was made that he could select what camera was flown on his flight. Well, that would have been an interesting responsibility. Hey, Shearer, go pick something out, will you?
Yeah, try to keep it under...
It's $50.
Yeah, $50. That's...
The one astronaut has like a Hasselblad. Another one's got like a disposable one Kodak. From the convenience store.
Shearer was much more sophisticated and pricey choice than the simple Ansco auto set that John Glenn bought for $40 at the Cocoa Beach, Florida drugstore.
There you go, right there.
Yeah, John, there you go.
John was, he was a bit of an oddball, wasn't he, when it came to things that the other astronauts did. So while the other astronauts were driving Corvettes, because they could buy them for $1.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Glenn was driving around this, what was it? It was this
Chevy Corvair.
No, it was like this little European thing. It was on Grand Tour, wasn't it, Donna? You know, it was going
Fiat.
It was kind of like a little Fiat putt-putt car. Like, really, John? Mm. So, yeah, the drugstore thing goes right in line. It gives you insight to the man. But hey, I would have voted for him for senator if he was in my state. But that's what he took pictures with in Friendship 7 in February 62. The Hasselblad retailed for about $500.
Back in 62.
That's a lot of money. Yeah. That's a lot of money. But
they've always been pricey. But yeah, that's, yes.
It used a much larger negative, which is going to get than Glenn's 35 millimeter. But boy, when you want to capture the
Zeiss
details.
Lenses. Yeah.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah. So.
The one where he's saluting the flag, that's a. Awesome picture.
When NASA got to look at Shearer's Hasselblad, they liked what they saw. The space agency purchased at least one more. Engineers tore into the off-the-shelf consumer model to make sure it was space-worthy. They stripped it down to save weight, painted it dull black to reduce reflections. Then they also had to, quote, astronaut-proof it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're wearing those big gloves, you're not going to be able to be turning dials real easy. So you want to be fitting that up. Fairly long article with some gorgeous
pictures.
Gorgeous pictures. Color and black and white.
Oh, so amazing.
I could look at these all day. This is truly space porn here.
They did a good job of recreating how it really never happened.
Yeah.
priceless. Rubber.
Yeah. Yeah,
just God, this is amazing pictures.
These are just awesome. Donna's got a few really cool on the screen.
The picture with the lunar rover.
Rover.
Look at the tires.
Saluting the flag.
Look at the tires. You can see the.
I guess scroll up way back.
Right there, right there.
Yeah, oh, awesome. The big one with the in the foreground.
Look at the tires. Look at it. Such detail, man.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. All right, I think that's our last article in the show, is it not? It is. Oh, so we're going to close with a question for you. What NASA or other space mission sticks out in your mind? Mm. Now, we have listeners of all ages. I know where our general demographic is, but this will be interesting because
a few of us
remember the actual space Apollo 11 landing. I got to ask my family, where the heck were we? Because I should have been old enough to remember this. I don't know where we were or what was going on. It was probably past my bedtime or something.
I vaguely remember it, but it was so blurry.
But as you get into the later ones, we talked about the handshake in space in 75. There was obviously the shuttle disasters, both of them.
I'll tell you one that sticks out in my mind right now.
What's that?
And that is when the original shuttle came in for its first landing.
Oh, yeah. Or the test flight of the Enterprise launching off the back of the Boeing 747.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't so much as watching it take off. I remember seeing that. I mean, we've seen that a million times. But it's that first time everybody's on the edge of the seat waiting for it to come in.
What was the phrase he uttered out when he landed?
Holy crap!
No, right on the money.
Right on the money.
Right on the money. So, that was memorable.
Where's my bag so I can poop?
I think the most memorable one was in the movie 2012 when they landed in the LA Canal. Yeah, that was it. That was the most memorable one.
Or they went out to the asteroid to blow it up.
Yeah, exactly. And Armageddon, that's the most
That was Bruce pretty Willis. Memorable.
Yeah.
You said space mission. It's kind of general.
Yeah, okay. The TARDIS out in space looking at the universe ending.
Sure.
That's going to be memorable. Stay on target.
Stay on target.
There you go.
Porkins, no.
See, people, this is what I have to work with.
What space mission sticks on your mind? Porkins, no.
Porkins, no. Negative, negative. Just impacted it on the surface.
You know our listeners are going to go there now that we open that door. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks, Brian, for hanging out.
Thank you for having me, as always.
The thing we forgot to mention about being a Patreon member is we're going to record another show right after this, and only they get to listen to it.
It's true.
It's not highly produced. This is like insightful. This is where our brains go.
It's raw.
It's raw and meandering discussion. It could take 10 minutes. It could take 30 minutes. We have no idea.
10 minutes? I've never seen a 10-minute one.
I think their first couple were 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So.
What you want to talk about?
You like computers? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we're good. Then I sign us out with the.
That button
are
there?
Are we still doing the long format? We are doing the long format on the ending. Yes, because we want to hear from you. Call us on the listener line with your favorite space mission, or just wait for it to show up on social media. 707, that's the old airplane, 707-530-2428. We want to hear from you, or send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. We'd love to hear from you regarding this or any other Apollo 11 memories that you have. We will be back with show 571, probably in a week. Brian, you might be around.
I suppose so for show 517, sure.
715, 175, we're
going to start over.
Slice it any way we can.
I remember that.
Until then, Craig, give us a binary high five.
All righty. 101, to the moon.
There's a zero between Apollo 11? Apollo 101?
That's right, Apollo 101.